This is outlandish.
I know we're not supposed to laugh at five people dying, but this is the most ridiculous. They all paid $250,000 to be on this boat or this goddamn submarine.
I mean, wow.
So,
hour in?
Oh man.
Okay, I'm sorry. This doesn't make for probably good listening to of us just like but I'm
no, but like but, this is
live, y'all.
We are doing this in real time. Now that I've caught up. Oh man.
You know how much coverage has been spent on people that was dead days ago?
This is the Bruce Poinsett Show. This is the Bruce Poinsett Show. Oh, the world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bruce Poinsett. Along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio of the Portland Art Museum.
This is the best of the Bruce Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bruce Poinsett, and along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio of the Portland Art Museum. You can catch the full show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7. You can also catch clips on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett, plus exclusive bonus content on patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett. Make sure to follow us on twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM, that's Numbers with a Z, or the Numbers Podcast Network on thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's Numbers with a Z, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Bruce Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial, and we have a special guest, Numbers family, literally, in the building. Got Morgan Jones, who I don't usually do the formal intro, but I feel like this one's worth it. So Morgan Jones is a podcaster, political analyst, on-air personality, co-host of Woke PDX Cultural Events, EDI consultant and facilitator, sneaker and music enthusiast, and most importantly, proud graduate of Your Daddy Like It University. Welcome, Morgan Jones.
That's me. Thank you.
How are you doing today, Morgan?
I am wonderful. I've been looking forward to this for 2 weeks now. So it's a great day.
Yeah.
How are you?
Have you in studio? I'm doing good. It's Thursday. It's draft day. Chris Paul's going to the Warriors.
Draft day? Breaking news. Sorry, I didn't mean to yell. My bad. I've been in a news hole and not that kind of news. So, wow. Okay. This used to be a big deal to me in my life.
Yeah.
Clearly, I don't know anything anymore.
Oh, just a lot of things happening. I've just learned, Ado, you let me know that Chris Paul is apparently going to the Warriors, and that's wild. And I have to do a lot of processing of all that.
Wow.
But in theory, we're going to talk about quote unquote real news. But before we get into all that, though, I just want to talk about like your background, both with hosting, like very prolific in media and also live events. And one, as far as just like the background with like doing live shows, can you just talk about what got you into that? What got you into that space? Because it's it can be a lot.
Specifically, you mean hosting live events that are okay. Yeah, how did I get into that? I think Woke was my first like really hosting multiple live events. Mm. And then facilitating in the breakouts and stuff. How did that happen? I started podcasting first. I should tell you that I come from a prolific media family. I don't. Oh. Well, sort of, not really at all. But my grandma was on TV. My dad was, I kind of do now that I'm saying this out loud. So my grandma was on TV for a long time, Geneva Jones. And my uncle Steve, Steve Jones, was Snapper and was a Blazer commentator. The Steve Jones.
Steve Snapper Jones.
And my dad is Nick Jones, who was also in the NBA and then worked for the Blazers for not a very long time, almost 15, 16 years, something like that, where he went around and talked to people live all day. That's what he did. Businesses, kids, all the things. And my entire life, like, public speaking was my one of my biggest fears. It was just like, there's absolutely no way that I could ever do what my dad does. That's crazy. I don't know how he does it. And then shout out to Kan Jones, my sibling by choice, asked me to be on a podcast. And I said no. And Ambush said, you should do that. And I said, you are wrong. And then I did it. And then I loved it. Took a minute to love it. I hated it at first. But and then that kind of just like broke me out of the being scared to talk in front of people thing. And sometimes when I'm, you know, like have an event and I start talking, my voice is a little shaky, and I've learned to figure out, just be like, oh, that's happening. It will go away. And I'm nervous all the time, but then it's fine. So shout out to Faith, who asked me to host a woke event with Kan, or well, I guess it was Kan asked me. And then we were just a part of that. We were going to be the hosts of all the woke events. And shout out to Britton, also Numbers fam, and Rashonda, Numbers fam. They both were instrumental in getting me to host My People's Market, and which introduced me to Michelle. So then I got to host Paseo, and there's, you know, a bunch of different things now that I can put on a resume. It's a weird thing to do. It's when you're used to talking to someone and you can like feed off of them and you have your banter. If there's no one else up there with you, it's an interesting place to be. A little scary, but.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you talk about just like initially kind of like having that sort of like fear of being on stage, like anxiety around that. Cause again, just like as someone who, you know, you mentioned Kan earlier in the Unrefined Sophisticates podcast, which, for my money, best podcast in Portland. it doesn't come off that way. Like, even seeing you like on stage with Britton at these My People's Market events, where it's like it feels very natural and very comfortable. So I'm curious, like, was there like a moment you had sort of in this journey where it just like it clicked like that?
I want to say yes, but I don't think so. I think that each time I am as nervous as I was the first time, and then it goes away. So the click like happens in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like sometimes I'll get up there and be like, hey, I'm Morgan Jones, and my voice is all weird. And I'm like, just give it a second. It'll be fine. And then that click, like it, then it's fine. Sort of like acknowledging it. But no, I'm still scared. I'm still anxious. I'm still nervous. But I also like it. I like it a lot. I like talking to people. I like running my mouth, clearly. I mean, I try and be in front of a microphone all the time. So something happened. I just don't know when it happened.
So you say you're at that stage where, so I was talking about this with someone else the other day, as far as like, you know, just being like comfortable with your voice, and like listening to yourself, because that is a thing.
It's a thing. People. It took me a long time. That was a part of why I did not want to do a podcast. I was like, I don't want to have to listen to me. I hate my voice. And I have spent my life hating my voice. Like, ew, it sounds like that. And then I realize I hear something that you don't hear, you know, like it's just different. And I'm far more comfortable with it now. Although I will tell you, if I like get surprised by it, like if I don't know, something happened where it was all of a sudden my voice is on the radio or on TV, and I'm like, why? That terrifies me. But it's not like, ew, gross. It's just like, where is she coming from? I get surprised.
Well, I think like another theme with a lot of these things, whether it be like Woke PDX, My People's Market, but then also Unrefined Sophisticates, News with My Fiance. Shout out to Ambush in studio.
Shout out to Ambush.
You know. But I was going to say, like, another theme is just, like, collaboration. It's usually, like, co-hosts, partners. And, again, I feel like the chemistry jumps off stage, jumps off screen. jumps off speaker with it, again, whether it's Cannes, Ambush, Britain, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you.
Can you just talk about, it's like the process in building that. And I asked this personally, because like I'm in my own thing. I like watch other people. I'm like, dang, that rapport is awesome. How do I siphon that from you all? You know?
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I think it's just like you click with certain people, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I would have the same chemistry with someone else, you know? But like, it also takes having an actual relationship. So I have an actual relationship with Can. I have an actual relationship with Brit, actual relationship with Ambush. So it's like, we are just being ourselves. And that's one of the best things about this, is that I think one of the things that was big scary for me was thinking that I had to be right all the time, or know exactly what I was talking about the whole way through and be an expert, right? And that is not real. It's not a real expectation. No one should have that expectation of themselves. But coming to the understanding that that's not real, what this really allows me to do is be myself. And so I am authentically myself on every single show I'm on every stage I'm on, which is a big difference from working in corporate structures or nonprofit structures where you are masking, you know, code switching. And I don't have to do that. And so that alone, I think, allows for chemistry to be a little more showy, mm-hmm. because we're not hiding anything. You don't have to like suppress. You don't have to worry about what you're saying or how you're saying it. So, but I don't know. I make connections with people, I guess. I don't know what to say.
I'll editorialize a little bit. I feel like in these different platforms, you're able to like maintain that balance of both substance, but also having fun, being jokey, where I think oftentimes it can, you know, make the actual content stick more. Like you talk about this idea of sort of like the construct we have of like what's quote unquote official and real, especially like I think about these media spaces.
Yeah.
And, you know, having, I guess, the idea of what I thought media was supposed to be coming out of journalism school versus being working at a newspaper, doing more multimedia stuff. And like, what is it supposed to look like? What makes it official? What codes as official to other people? And it's just, you kind of like learn through the process, like, oh yeah, there is no set definition. There is no, whatever rules people are saying there are, they're not really rules.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people are getting information, just working with middle schoolers and asking them, okay, so where do you get info from? And they're talking about, yeah, I watch this Twitch streamer, right. You know, right. And like some of that can be frightening, but also some of that.
And
like,
some of that can be great.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Maybe I need to learn how to play video games again so I can just,
right.
I can, you know, not pontificate, but like,
yeah.
You know, I can proselytize to the children.
I'm in the same boat. I honestly am in the same boat. Like the Twitch is, and I mean, there's all other kinds, but being like a streamer politically is a thing that makes sense to me because it is like just more conversation. So to me, it is a way that people can learn without feeling like they're there to learn. And that opens people up to so many different avenues of learning. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think I definitely remember being like, you said you get your news from YouTube. Like what? Like years ago. And there are so many smart, so many brilliant, so many great researchers that are doing great things that, you know, like it's happening. And we would have never thought that that was legitimate or official or whatever. And the more that I learned that all of the things that we were told should be official are just like, you know, white supremacist structures that are not for us anyway. Like, why do I want to play by those rules? Right.
You know, sometimes I feel admittedly like when I ask people, you know, where do you get your news from? when they say like Twitter or something, the journalism snob in me wants to be like,
how dare you?
You know, but I feel like there's a, I'm not even gonna say a happy medium, just more of a being more accurate about it. So like, okay, you get it from Twitter because, you know, we go in the news feed and we follow certain people, but like, who do they, like, who does you get from this writer? Who do they write for? Like, you don't even have to tell, like, yes, you get it from Twitter, but just tell me the outlet. Tell me the writer. We can, it's not that you're finding it on Twitter. It's just understand the source you're going with. Understand, you know, like who pays for, who's sponsoring this paper or whatever. What's this person's background? Not to, some people hear that and they're like, you're just discouraging me from getting the information. It's like, right. No, I just want you to have a more accurate, closer understanding of the information you're getting. That's all.
And that's really important. And I wonder if that's your journalism background. Mine comes from just being nosy. And I just want to know, like, who's the person who's telling me this? Because the amount of money that is in propaganda, basically, just, you know, the amount of money that's in it and the amount of money that they spend to hide who has paid for this thing, that's enough for me to want to know who paid for everything. Because why are you hiding it? Why don't you want me to know that the Ayn Rand Association had something to do with this, you know? So I'm with you. I am a big proponent of, I'm not going to tell you where you can or should or can't or whatever get your information, but I highly encourage people to know the source and know the motives of that source, because if they're spending a bunch of money to make your life miserable, but then give you news that also just makes you miserable, there's a reason that's happening. It is literally to control you. And that this is not like some conspiracy theory. It really is just, we know people are motivated by fear. And if you can scare people a lot, scare them in things that are related to their lives, then they're going to act in some way. So the importance of the source is really, really high up there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I take for granted, again, it's just like journalism school background, like, you know, I got formally taught a lot of these things, and most people not going to journalism school. And also, I just think, again, when it comes to media literacy, it's, you shouldn't have to go to journalism school when, you know, the 10 o'clock news and all these things, like, you're getting that information that's influencing your decisions, the decisions of those around you anyway.
Right. So
like a big thing has been just, trying to make media literacy more accessible to people, just because, again, this stuff affects you regardless. This affects your policy decisions, whether you go to journalism school or not.
Big time.
So just like, however, and I think honestly, like, we talk about the numbers, we talk about different projects we do, like, we serve a role. I know, I'm sure you have people come up to you, because they come up to me and like, hey, Bruce, I trust you. I don't trust...
Yeah,
I'll trust the media, or, you know, the media,
the legacy media or the mainstream media. But yeah,
you're a trusted voice. And part of me is like, thank you. I appreciate the support. Part of me is also, you know, gets a little anxious because I'm like, don't put all that responsibility on me, because there's like, I'm a recovering news junkie. when I was in college, I would wake up like watching, like, I'll watch CNN on mute while I'm reading a news story before breakfast. Waiting for class, reading, like, I have like 10 different, you know, sites outlets where I just go through like every story on the front page at least. And like, I'm doing that from when I wake up to basically in between classes, in between activities. And I watch Democracy Now and then turn on some documentary to, like, you know, Rosetta Stone myself to sleep to.
Wow.
Yeah. I ended up having a panic attack when I started working for a newspaper and trying to still do that. So I don't recommend people do that.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I realize it's like that thing where it's like, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know.
Yes.
Like, once you go on to, not even like a specific thing, but like, once you go to, like, I want to know what's happening on the continent. So I go to All Africa. they have sections for every country for all the news. I don't have enough time in the day to learn everything that's happening. Never mind dealing with the bias and perspectives of what sources they're getting that news from and what stories those are coming from.
Right.
So I understand when people are like, hey, I can't follow everything, so I go to the trusted source. I get that.
I'm with that too, but we are also, you know, for the most part, not Africa. So,
yeah,
you know, there's some stories you could keep up on without, not you, that folks could keep up on without having to look so deeply. I worry about people that say, I just can't keep up, or the news is just too scary, or, ooh, it makes me feel bad. Like y'all folks make me worry. Like, I also am very curious about what kind of life that is. That's cool. I'm in perpetual panic because I have to know what's going on.
Right.
That is, I have to know. Mm. But anyway.
I'm curious to that end though, like, because we all engage in some process of basically like curating news stories, because one, with whatever you're doing, you have a runtime. You have only but so much time. And you're like, it's like when you're going about curating stories. So for example, for a new News with My Fiance episode, like what does that process look like to narrow it down and say, this is what we want to talk about, and this is what we think is important to make it, you know, stick with our audience?
So what I have noticed about News with My Fiance is Ambush and I have very different schedules and very full schedules. So it's not like we get to sit down and plan the show together. What ends up happening is, no matter which way we decide stories, like sometimes, you know, he'll send me stuff, I'll send stuff, and then I'll start to put it together. Sometimes it's just me, sometimes it's just him. But for the most part, once I figure out, I'll narrow down like six stories. And we used to try and do three local, three national, and really understand that the bulk of our show is the context of the story, of the news story, not necessarily the news story. So we would never get to all six stories because we would be talking about, you know, and giving context to why this was important or our commentary on it. So we've narrowed that down and made it a little easier. Two and two sounds great. Sometimes that doesn't work because sometimes there's three local stories that are just get us riled up. So sorry to cut to the answer of your question. What ends up happening is we talk about those stories, and it's the ones that get us the most riled up. They're the ones that get us the most passionate about talking about it. Those are the ones that I'm like, keep it and write that story out.
This is very, sounds very organic, basically. Like,
yeah, it is. And I didn't recognize that until probably last week, but, you know, just been doing the show for like a year and a half or longer than that. I don't know how long News with My Fiance has been a thing, but.
So sometimes it takes longer for that to come together for a lot of people. Yeah. So,
well, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's me for Unrefined. I find most of the stuff, and sometimes there are things that are on the doc that we just don't get to. And then there's other times where we'll talk about it before we start recording. And it's like, oh, this one doesn't, this is boring, or you don't know anything about this. I don't know anything about this. This is not one. So it really is just like a chat it through.
So speaking of the Unrefined Sophisticates, like, you have one of my favorite, as far as just like promotional methods, like specifically like on IG, y'all have just like the carousel of random social media.
It's
wonder.
It's the you know, the meme farming for me. It's the I spend a lot of time just on different like I would call myself a news junkie. I am not recovering or recovered, but I do get a lot of stories from Twitter, but I don't stay at Twitter, you know, like, so to your point of the media literacy, it's like you find something on Twitter or Reddit or wherever you find those things, and then you need to go out of that and Google those things and find other articles. And if there aren't any, you know to stop. Like, don't look further because someone's lying to you. But yeah, it's a, so I end up spending more time on the internet seeing reactions. I love going to the comments and seeing how crazy people are. And so I get a lot of memes, a lot of reacts right off of that, and throw it in the slide.
I think, cause I feel like a lot of us are just wrestling with how do we market ourselves in a, you know, an oversaturated market,
yes,
of just everything. And how do you cut through the noise? So like, even when I pull up the page here and I just get like the first six slides that show up, white girl in braids, or white girl with Pop Smoke braids.
They said you look like George Washington with Pop Smoke braids. That is like the funniest thing in the world to me.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer.
Yes. It's a Black Power moment, okay, you know?
Chuck Schumer with the Kwame.
Yes. We got some kente cloths, you know?
I think I reposted the Oprah and Whoopi Goldberg. I can talk. Whoopi Goldberg, Hot Girl Summer.
Yo, the City Girl, Whoopi, and Oprah's. I only found two of those, but they're like my favorite pictures on the internet. And they're both on that page. So if you are wondering what I'm talking about, go to the Unrefined Sophisticated
AI
IG.
Tatted up shirtless Dr. King. George Bush with the George W. Bush with the Devin Booker haircut.
With the AirPods. Yo, the internet has given us some greatness. Like that, yeah.
Because it's funny, it's like I try and repost these when I see them. And I get responses from people who are just,
yeah,
you know, especially with the Oprah Whoopi Goldberg one.
Yeah.
Certain, I'm not going to say who it was. Shout out to you, though. Which is in the pockets of like, okay, hey, man, it was too early in the day for this. It's just
like, didn't need to see that. They needed to see that. They needed it.
But I do think, I think the bigger point, though, is like when we're talking about marketing, just seeing people having fun. Like,
yeah,
it really, like, it sounds small, but it does something, you know?
I started doing those slides, trying to, like, include a bunch of stuff that we talked about on the show and in the episode, you know? And that was, like, close, but just not it. And I think that's because there's stuff on the show that we talk about where there is, like, an educational moment or, you know, there's a moment to learn. And so, in keeping consistent with the idea of laughter makes certain things land, like I felt like maybe the marketing for this should just be funny. Like it should just be chuckles. You don't have to like be reminded of whatever white supremacy thing just happened that we talked about for, you know, 20 minutes. Like we can just laugh sometimes, and that's a survival tactic. So yeah. I don't know how it really like just all the way evolved into this, but it's like one of my favorite things to do is to look for memes for that slide.
As a fan, I enjoy scrolling through them and just
having
some moments.
I love an award. Where's the soundboard? I need awards. I need applause, tokens, something. Reggae horn. Always start with the reggae horn.
Ooh,
or don't board. Or don't or don't, it's fine.
So one thing I want to have you in as again as a not a recovering news junkie to talk about some of the some news stories that are definitely not under the radar, some that kind of are. But before we get there, because I do want to talk about news with my fiance and ambush, and specifically sounds like you're, because you have so much time talking about news stories, like how much time do you get to talk about Batman being a cop though?
Because
I feel like it's very it's very important. Those who are watching can't see in the background, ambush is basically just,
oh, he stood up.
He stood up.
The Dark Knight. He rises.
We can't be in studio together without this. It's what makes the dynamic work.
It's true. I don't talk about Batman being a cop, but I talk about him being a worthless billionaire a lot.
Ooh, that is a great sub or segue to the submarine story.
Which Batman at least would have something that is equipped to go to the bottom of the ocean, because he at least would spend the billion, you know, like,
right,
get Alfred to make sure that the people do the thing, like, you know, these dudes, not even.
Yeah. Like, speaking of that, so admittedly, I have not been following the submarine story at all. Like, I've seen a few memes here and there. And, you know, you all were talking about it in studio today. And I was like, we should talk about this. We should talk about this on air so I can learn in real time for people to watch. And also, I didn't realize the, like, billionaire angle of it, because the way I had seen it was like, oh, no, this tragedy and these poor people in the submarine.
Yeah. And
what had happened. So, like, I'm kind of getting the context. But can you just fill people in on What is happening? What is the submarine story?
I can also just really quickly give you the context. This is very, it's giving Gabby Petito. And I'll tell you why. We get really great, amazing, around the clock coverage for missing white people, and especially missing white women. And this submarine does not have any white women on it, but we know what the end result is going to be. As we knew what the end result was with Gabby Petito, and that her boyfriend or fiance, whoever it was the person who killed her, and the police let him go. So this particular thing is getting all of the attention when there was also a boat that had nearly 800 people on it sink off the coast of Greece. Mm-hmm. And that's not the conversation. So just want to say those things real quick, because that's what this story is. It is because people are wealthy, we care. Mm-hmm. They decided to go. There's a company called OceanGate. OceanGate operates in Everett, Washington. They specialize in ocean expeditions. And they, I guess, maybe have submarines, but not this. This is a submersible, which means it can go underwater. And this particular one is supposed to be rated to go as deep as 4,000 meters, except for the window on it isn't. So good luck with that. Yeah, the window on it is rated for like 1,400 meters, which is not 4,000. If you are not great at conversion, you don't need to be, because one number is far bigger than the other. And that number means pressure and depth of the ocean. So, like, I don't know how far those people got, in all honesty. Like, if you get in, so, okay, I'm too far, too far. I'm sorry.
Who are these people on the boat?
Okay, so
that was the one that surprised
me. There's one billionaire on the boat. No, two billionaires on the boat, I think. There's a billionaire who is a, like, energy baron from... He's Pakistani, but is...
he lived in the UK.
Became a UK's a British citizen. So he and his son, because it was just Father's Day. So, of course, like, that probably was the plan. We will spend $500,000, get into what looks like a pill, and sit there for 4 days, and then we'll go get to see the Titanic and go home, I guess. I don't know what they thought was going to happen. One of the people was the CEO of the OceanGate company. And then there's two other guys, I think. I don't remember exactly who they are. They are wealthy, but not billionaires.
They were like divers, or like they were both.
One's a diver.
Yeah, one of them was a diver. I think they were both like ocean-based people. Like, they know a lot about the water.
Okay. Like, one definitely was like a scientist of some sort. The other one, I am not as positive as Ado sounds. But excuse me. So the entire premise is that you are gonna go on the Titan, which is the submersible. And you will go down to the wreckage of the Titanic. And then like float around it or something. I'm unsure. I thought, you know, from the jump, I was like, oh, okay. So then they're going to hop out, grab a couple, you know, loot the rest of the things over there. I don't know. Like one of them I know for certain was like a huge Titanic enthusiast. And I, okay. As I said on news with my fiance this morning, I mean, that is just a class warfare boat. Like there's no reason to be excited about the wreckage of literally classism on a boat. Mm-hmm. There's no, like what what's the interesting thing that you want to get off of there, mm-hmm. you know, especially at this point. But anyway, then finding out that they can't get out of the Titan, that not only can they not get out, like just once they get to the Titanic, they can't get out if they got to the surface. They are bolted in, mm-hmm. sealed, must have help from someone else, must have mothership take the, you know, like help them get back up to anywhere, and they're not tethered to anything.
Can I also add a few structural details?
Please.
Because I watched a video on like how they built it, and it's confirmed. The way it's controlled is with a knockoff PlayStation controller.
Yes, that.
One that you can buy this right now for like $30. I've seen it at Goodwill. Oh. I've seen this controller at Goodwill's. For less. There was like hardware, people in the video, they were like bragging, being like, yeah, you can get these parts at Home Depot right now. Like obviously the bolting in, I didn't know about the window until now. It was pretty like, also they said it was the size of a minivan and it has no seats. So everyone's just sitting on the floor.
It's 22 feet long. It's a 22-foot.
I would just like to look directly in the camera. So again, this is my live reaction because I've tried not to pay attention to the story because it's one of those like big tragedies that just kind of like comes to you. It's like, oh, I'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
But so if you see my face, I'm not just, this isn't like planned Stephen A. Smith mugging for the camera. This is real with these details.
It's a mess. It's a mess. And the more like Ado said, 22 feet, like it's a minivan.
So this is like a mixture. Cause I remember there was some proposal.
22 feet's a little longer than a minivan, but yeah. I don't know, 15 passenger van. Like how?
Cause wasn't there like a proposal for a similar, I guess, mission of like, we're going to send billionaires to like Mars or something like that.
Oh yeah. I mean,
mixed with that new, did you see the trailers for that new G4 movie?
No.
It's like, or is it G4? Whatever the racing game is, because it's like Gran Turismo. That's what it is. So it's like based on this guy who learned to become a race car driver by playing the game.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because what I'm hearing is Billionaires to Mars meets Gran Turismo, the video game.
Yeah.
And everyone died.
Yeah. I mean, send them to Mars. Let them go. Have fun.
Same with sending them to the water.
Yeah, these are choices. We're in the middle of a war with the orcas. You want to go down there? That's it.
Wow.
I mean.
So we just got a confirmation. Ambush just passed me the phone, and I see it on his computer over here. We have official cause of death. All five people in the submarine have died officially due to implosion, which is crazy.
Okay. Okay.
An hour into the descent.
This is the Black Mirror episode.
Wait. So that means that they, because, okay, wait.
So they
okay,
we got to
wait.
So they've been dead. They died, yes. They died when they started.
Okay, I want to go, because this was going to be part of me trying to give you the story, is that they took off, or I don't know, what do you call it? Went down? The descent? They left at on Sunday and lost all communication an hour and 45 minutes into the descent.
Oh.
So that means they died before they lost communication? Bam.
This is okay. Mars mission.
Is it a live situation?
Because I feel like I need play test from Black Mirror.
This is crazy.
Goodness.
With the controller. With the gaming controller.
Oh my goodness.
Listen. This is outlandish.
I know we're not supposed to laugh at five people dying, but this is the most ridiculous. They all paid $250,000 to be on this boat or this goddamn submarine.
I mean, wow.
So,
an hour in?
Oh, man.
Okay, I'm sorry. This doesn't make for probably good listening to of us just like, but I'm...
No, this is live, y'all. We are doing this in real time. Now that I've caught up. Oh man!
You know how much coverage has been spent on people that was dead days ago. Oh.
I mean, I'm not saying that's the clip, but
I am. The weekend. That is. Wow. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely happy that we have spent all these resources on that. Do you know how many people went out to look for that? Wait. Because.
22 foot submersible.
Yep.
Called Titan.
Mm-hmm. Titan.
Which. Is even funnier to me now.
No, it's so great. I have great.
The numbers for it.
It's so great.
And this is, because admittedly, like I said, I have not been following the story. I've been only briefly following some conversation around, you know, should we really be making jokes about this on Twitter or not?
Right.
And now that I'm here, I think I fall firmly on the side of, the jokes are going to happen.
They write themselves. I'm sorry. You decided. This was a decision. This was not an accident. Like, or not an accident, but this wasn't like a tragedy in the same way that a boat capsizing with refugees on it is a tragedy. And that got like no coverage as a tragedy. Finding out that like the Greece Coast Guard police folks probably sank that boat because they tried to tow it. That's news. Yeah. Like, and that's not being talked about.
It's been happening.
And they sent out planes, drones, other boats, the rover thing that goes on Mars, like that kind of tech, that's down there, which is great because the Titan never made it that far. And the Titan also never made it that far any other time it tried.
Oh my God.
It doesn't work. And then they kept doing it. Somebody was like, regulations, who needs it? Like, we're a private company. We do what we want. Sign this thing that says if you die, you die. And they did. And then they did.
Oh my. It's like, there's some serious angles I want to take as far as like, even that comparison, because it makes me think of like war in Ukraine right now, again, with just driving around and seeing all these Ukraine flags and how we just finally like dump all the money into that. And we're talking about predator drones now that we didn't talk about in Iraq, Libya, Pakistan.
Is it just a new name for it? Because weren't they those things before?
They absolutely were.
Okay.
It's just like, I remember trying to have the conversation when Obama just exponentially expanded the predator drone program, and people are like, oh no, what? It's not that serious. What's happening is it's in those brown countries. Who cares? Well, and then it happened to some white people, and we're like, oh, war.
Yep. No, I mean, if you can frame it as you are saving troops, right? Like, that's really, I don't have the same affinity for the military as many people in this country do, but the, if you're able to frame anything, as Obama did, it was like, I'm going to, you know, we're going to save lives, American lives.
Yeah. So we're going to wipe out literally hundreds of thousands of others.
I mean, don't like count, you know, like don't keep count. They're just, these are enemies of war. You can't get behind it.
There was a policy too. Because I remember it seemed like ridiculous and dystopian when they had like the policy of like, everyone knows this is happening. News channels are reporting on it. But I think it was Jay Carney was the press secretary at the time. Like there was a rule he couldn't acknowledge it in the press conferences. And I was like, that seems ridiculous. And everyone can see this, right? And then I talk with people and they're like, well, I mean, they're not talking about it. So I guess it's not really happening?
It's not really.
Yes, we are. Yeah. There's reporting from everywhere, from the same news channel you're watching this press conference on, saying it doesn't exist.
You just turn it off after the press conference. You don't even notice that all that information is there for you.
Yeah, we're spiraling off here. but I think it kind of comes back to the media literacy point and the curating news point, because you know, we're talking about the story that everyone's talking about. But I also want to talk about a national story and a local story. I feel like we're kind of going under the radar, might need some context for people. Mm. So we'll start nationally.
Okay.
Most people hopefully understand there's a presidential election coming up. Kind of a big deal. And it's already, it's tough in the world of, hey, fascism is right at the door with Trump or DeSantis, whoever wins that battle, or Biden.
Joe Byron. Joseph Robinette.
Justin Robinette. But a new person has entered the race and has made for an interesting conversation around that.
Indeed.
Dr. Cornel West. And I want to preface this as someone who actually has been inspired by Dr. West and his work over the years. Read Race Matters back in like eighth grade. That's kind of like where my journey with Dr. West has begun. So I don't say to get into the topic I'm about to get into lightly with this third party run, but I want to preface that as saying like, this is a person I respect. This is a person who I think, as far as jumping into the campaign and especially holding Joe Biden accountable for not just pushing more conservative, I think there's a very tangible, functional role of that.
Yes.
But okay. Also, I have some concerns. The rollout has been interesting. So
that's a nice way to say.
Yeah.
That.
For those who don't know, we started out, he had a video, which some have said kind of sounds like it had like the blaxploitation music and everything. It was a little weird when he rolled out with the People's Party.
I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. I didn't watch that video. But
yeah, you'll watch it later. For those who don't know, the People's Party, again, independent party started, I feel like a few years ago with like people who were with the Bernie Sanders campaign. The last person they ran for president was Jimmy Dore, noted, prolific, I'm not even gonna call him a progressive grifter.
Good.
Because
that ain't it.
Yeah. But in theory, grifter markets himself as a progressive while spending most of his time attacking other progressive candidates, media personalities.
Yeah.
Does a lot to, you know, canoodle with straight up white supremacists.
Yep.
Which would seem like a tell for most people, but
somehow it's not.
No, talk to a lot of white leftists in Portland. They love that. They love it.
People's brains are broken. Like, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just want to say really quickly, like the Jimmy Dore, that Russell Brand, like we have watched people go from having what were reasonable, you know, questions and journeys and, you know, whatever the, you know, situation is, to allowing a debate about vaccines break their brains. So much so that they are in now like this perpetual purgatory. You don't get to go back to any of the progressive policies that you're talking about, if at some point in your anti-vax pipeline, you have picked up all of these anti-black things, all of these anti-trans things, all of these, you know, like, you don't get to just go back and be like, oh man, okay, never mind, and dust yourself off and be like, I'm a progressive. No, you're not. No, if you ever were, which is, Jimmy's always been questionable to me, but if you ever were, you are no longer that. And they need to be treated with that. His show is entertainment for people that are completely fine with the way that the world is. And I don't have time for that. That to me means you are unserious. That to me means that you don't actually understand any of the things that you claim to be fighting for. And so you're not a part of the community for us at large anyway. But watching people lose their minds based on vaccines that, you know, those people have had vaccines as children. You know, those people have had vaccines as adults. And y'all let the internet break you in a way that was like, but science, right? Like it was too much common sense. I can't handle it. So anyone listening to Jimmy Dore, I'd love to chat with you and tell you to stop.
So you're much more generous than I.
Well, it's because they get audiences. And that's the thing that kills me, is that he's not saying anything, and he's not giving anything to anyone anymore. And it's been years that he hasn't.
I'll say this. What he's giving is, like, he's loud, and he gives you a quick and convenient place to channel your anger, which I think is I try not to. I don't support it, obviously, but, you know, I'm trying to, like, get what the appeal is and why people go for the grift. And it's like, okay, if you have an ability to capture this audience of, I guess, like, his background's like a stand-up comedian or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you have the opportunity to capture audience, a grieved audience.
Right.
And you give them a simple ask, you know, support my channel. Or, you know, his whole thing was, force the vote for Medicare for all, which I believe in healthcare, but it's one of those things where you do something that sounds good, but you don't have any substance behind it. You're not actually doing something functional behind it, but you're loud and angry. People see that and they're like, I can trust that person. And he's kind of funny. I can trust him. He entertains me. And then what you get is just something I've seen. Again, it's not just Jimmy Dore. I think it's one of the most glaring examples of it, but
Joe Rogan.
Yeah. It's just this.
Joe Rogan's exactly the same. And any of you Roganites, you can come at me. We can talk about it. It's the same thing. It's white male aggrievement that just ends up getting to manifest in different ways. And so that little part of the pipeline, it takes you other places, and you will never get out of that pipeline without experiencing a whole bunch of anti-everybody non-white man. And I mean, that ain't progress. You don't get to call yourself a progressive. You don't get to tell me you care about politics either, because you're not doing anything to actually move a needle. Right. And like with Force the Vote, you illustrated that perfectly. He's yelling, he's mad. We're all yelling, we're mad. Like, I firmly believe that everybody deserves healthcare. There should be universal healthcare. I fundamentally believe that. Yelling about it into a microphone and getting people to be like, yeah, and then what? You're not holding any of your own local politicians to account. You keep electing the same national people.
Andy's just the biggest, I think, tangible thing from that whole effort was just undercutting progressive politicians.
Easy.
Like I said, it's just
discredit.
Hey, can I smear AOC with this? Can I smear Ilhan with this?
Absolutely.
That's all it did. And again, like you said, like appealing to white male specifically, but just like white grievance culture, because I think one of the things that growing up in Oregon, I feel like, is giving me perspective on, is just like, these labels are just labels. A lot of people who fashion themselves as leftists or progressives, they are one moment of like, you know, oh, I applied and I didn't get into this school. I think the blacks did it, and switch over.
It's affirmative action.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely it's that just fault.
One thing. Yep. There are one moment, one bad interaction with a black or brown person from switching over to the side. And it can be like hard. Like one day I'm out here at Occupy. The next day I'm a libertarian. The next day, you know, I think the Proud Boys have something.
You're literally describing Jimmy Dore. Like, yeah, that's it. And the crowd, like, it happens real fast too. Like, and it's terrifying. Back to Cornel West, I think. I don't know. I'm sorry. No. I took us way far off. No, I
appreciate you doing the production job that I'm supposed to be doing. But Cornel West started running with the People's Party, who, again, ran Jimmy Dore the last time. He recently switched to the Green Party, which is a more official third party. They ran Jill Stein last time, and there's that too. But at least, like, they're a real third party, whereas the People's Party is on the ballot in three states. You know, same way we're talking about Kanye running on whatever party that was also on the ballot in like two or three states. It's that same level of seriousness.
Running. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I want to give some credit to, like, if you put Cornel West on those stages, and I don't know if they'll do that with this, like, yeah, he can have some national moments where he presses Joe Biden to take more left stances that he might not have taken otherwise. I think there's a value in that, but also, it kind of comes back to that unseriousness that, I don't know, I've started working with more organizations that do that electoral work and organizing during the whole year.
Right.
They're trying to, like, build up independent candidates or build up genuinely progressive candidates, build up the infrastructure around them. So I see what it looks like when people actually are like, hey, we want to run alternatives. We're tired of what the Democratic Party is doing and kind of like holding people back or, you know, letting the police and others co-opt the work. But then when I see people who, like, they only talk about third party when it's a general election and there's no plan, it's just, well, they can run. Why would you be against the People's Party? You're the enemy. And it's like, you're not talking about anything. They are on the ballot in three states, but it's Dr. West. How could you be against this? And it's like, you're just taking advantage of a bunch of people because reality is most people aren't paying attention, not because they're not serious. Some definitely are, but, you know, people work, people have other jobs, people do other things. So I get that, but they're also adamant. And also that crossover with, again, the white leftist who could easily be white supremacist after one incident is deep. And they love this, especially when you put a face like Dr. West on it.
Like, yeah.
So it doesn't matter that he had an op-ed where he was basically agreeing and pumping up Ron DeSantis last month, not last year, not 2 years ago. Dr. West did that last month.
I read that differently, and I think I'm in the minority.
Really?
Yeah. I did not take that to be as him pumping him up. Not the point of the conversation, but the way that I took what he was saying is the way that Cornel talks, you know, and let me be clear, Dr. Cornel West, we are not on a first name basis. I did not mean to just be like Cornel. He's bombastic a lot, you know? And so there's words that he's going to use very definitively and definitionally, I guess is what I mean to say, that may have a different context. And he knows that, but I think that it's like saying what DeSantis has done is revolutionary isn't wrong. It just isn't the revolution we want. And so, yeah, Trump is a problem. DeSantis is a bigger problem because DeSantis knows how to actually get these things done. Mm-hmm. And he has the motivation to get it done. Like, Trump is more, I have been living in my tower for so long. Every single one of you is beneath me. And I'm not actually worried about, like, someone getting me because Mar-a-Lago or whatever, right? DeSantis, you could get him. Like people know where he lives. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But So he knows what he wants done. He wants a ethno state. Like that's on the table. So like, he's way, way scarier, but a lot of the stuff that he has done is revolutionary in the definition. And so I don't think that, that was like the way to talk about Ron DeSantis, because it is a conversation of, my mom's calling me, a conversation of, did he just pump Ron DeSantis up instead of, look at all the bad things that Ron DeSantis is doing, you know? That's how I took it. That's how I read it. I think I am in the minority. I have not talked to anybody else who feels the same way. So I'm probably wrong.
I'll say, so thing that's kind of curious about me, or curious about it for me, is because he's talking about sort of like standardized testing, placing it with like the classics test. I forget if that's exactly the word. I know he like sits on the board of an organization trying to do that. So there's part of that embedded in sort of like the whole story. But he did, like Mark Lamont Hill recently had him on earlier this week to ask him about the campaign, but directly about that as well.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, Dr. West was explaining himself and saying, look, sometimes a broken clock is right twice a day as far as the part he agrees with DeSantis and removing certain standardized tests. And again, it was a little curious for me. It was hard not to think about how Dr. West also did that video at the bar conversation with Candace Owens, where I get the, like, I'm trying to bridge the gap. Point,
right.
I'm, you know, meeting people where they're at. So I don't want to say that there's no value in that, but I've also learned in this media space, people are very visual.
And for sure.
That most people are going to see the thumbnail of that and you're take like, their oh, message do they from go, there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do think it's important, though, in pointing out the details and diversions. Yeah.
I mean, for me, I think that you're not wrong about how people take stuff and see a picture of, you know, see a thumbnail of Dr. Cornel West and any white supremacist, including Candace Owens. Like, that's going to be a confusing thing. But again, that's on the person who's taking that. Right. Because if you don't know who Dr. Cornel West is, this is a 70-year-old man who has been a part of public, political, academic life for like 55 years. Like that, then on you. That's on you. But I feel you. Like the truth of it is, that is what some people are going to take. I don't see the value for me of talking to him talking to a Candace or a doing a Ron DeSantis anything. But the value isn't, it's not for us. It is for that person's audience.
Right.
So when he talks to Russell Brand, yeah, all those people that just red-pilled on accident, like that are now all of a sudden libertarians that just, you know, want everybody to keep their tax money and not have roads. I don't know, you know, those people need to hear from a Cornel West, right? Like any single body would benefit from hearing from him. So I don't love it. And it doesn't, but I know it's not for us because we already get the message and we're already on board. Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's kind of, that's an important point as far as, again, just like meeting people where they're at. And it's not like it's inconsistent with how Dr. West has moved throughout his career.
Yeah, everybody's a brother and sister, right? Yeah. Like a Republican brother and sister. Like, no, they're not, but okay. Right. Okay.
I guess it kind of speaks to the other part of, I feel like I have like two big worries with this campaign.
Okay.
Specifically. One is the one I think most people would think about is like, okay, functionally is mostly just going to weaken Biden in terms of votes when, again, like fascism is knocking at the door.
Mm-hmm.
It's already here, but, you okay, know,
thank
but,
you for saying
like,
that.
Like, yeah. Be clear. It's already here, but there is a real danger of Ron DeSantis or Trump getting that much power back. That said, the other thing is, when I look at how people who are concerned about Dr. West running and taking it as an opportunity to just be like, I'm gonna go full bore slander Dr. West and all these platforms, which I'm starting to see where it's like, no. Like
that's not
the way to engage with this. Don't, we're just gonna just completely, you know, shit on the legacy. Like, don't do that.
And there's no reason to.
Right.
You've not been given reason to do that. Like, that's just 1,000% what.
Yeah.
I'd want to make a point, though, that is, take these last, who's the president? Joe Biden and Trump. Mm-hmm. Take those two elections, right? They're going to run the exact same playbook. And if anybody is more interested in politics past what has just immediately happened, look behind you and all the same playbooks. It's always the same. Fascism is always at the door. Fascism is in the house. It's in the everywhere. It's in the all the things. We spent too much time as a country allowing the propaganda of like, no, that's other countries to happen for us to be like, you know, up in arms about the fascism today. Like, we literally just ushered it in. So that's one. Two, I'm never going to be more mad at a third party candidate than I am at the Democratic establishment who thinks it makes sense to run Joseph Robinette Biden, who is literally falling down as we speak.
Yeah.
Like, you, that's on you, because you didn't think that the black woman could win, or you didn't think that so-and-so could happen, or it could be as simple as it's his turn still, like it was for Hillary. This is silly. And what it, to me, just continues to illuminate is that all of this is like not real for the people that are in the most power. It's a job that is fun, that is like not a serious thing. It's literally like you're a Walmart greeter. And I don't say that disparagingly against a Walmart greeter. What I mean is they're not taking this home and dealing with it the way that we're all taking it home and dealing with it. And they don't care. So, like, you're not going to, like, hand-wring me and do all of the, how could you even think about voting? How could you think about running Joe Biden? How? Not with fascism at the door, right? Because if it's this big deal, what have you done to prove that fascism isn't the way to go for them? Because you haven't done it. And so, I'm not going to be mad at any other party that jumps in the ring. They're not going to win, and they're not going to pull enough votes from Joe. Like, Cornel West, all of the respect, I would love for, him to dismantle every single lever of American imperialism. That's not going to happen. He's saying it in interviews. You're not going to get elected. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so, like, that's my thing is, I'm not concerned about Cornell pulling anything from anyone. I think that it is a net benefit, I guess, that he will be able to hopefully be more nationally recognized for conversations about class, conversations about anti-imperialism. But he's not going to be the president, and he's not going to take enough votes. There's not enough radical white people to vote for him. There's just not.
No. I'll say this. You have more optimism for the conversation going in a smart place than I do. Because, and maybe that's by reframing
my own delusion.
Because, like that, again, my hope would be that he pushes the discussion, the discourse, the policy proposals left. He gives a national platform to real abolitionist ideas.
Yes.
And Dr. West is absolutely capable, has been doing that. And if they can get him on the stage for some of these debates.
Yeah, but what debates? That'd be great. Because the Democrats said they don't need him.
Also that.
I'm with you 100%. Yeah. Like, that is the point to have a third party run in this way. That is the point. That is why Bernie Sanders ran. that is why I believe Cornell is running, mm-hmm. is to, at the very least, mainstream some of these ideas so that people who are either sort of apathetic and don't understand how big of a deal any of this is, or the people who, you know, like us, have a greater understanding of how important those, not just ideas, but actions behind them are, and how immediate, because people are dying as we speak from just things we can fix within this country, right? So saying all of that to say, if he were on a debate stage, he would wreck every single one of them. If he were able to just have, you know, a sit down conversation with any one of them, he would wreck any one of them. And those ideas and planned actions can get out there to the people that haven't heard of it or didn't think it was possible, or, you know, had no idea that you could even be thinking in that regard. That's where the buck stops. It's not, he's not, no major shade to Marianne Williamson or anyone else who's doing things. I think hopefully, you know, the best part of me wants to believe that she's doing a run for the same reason, mm-hmm. just to mainstream some ideas. Cause she knows she's not going to win. And she also doesn't need a new book deal or, you know, life after the I ran for the presidency.
Right.
Like RFK is doing right now, or, you know, I don't know. Slow descent into being a mad Republican or whatever he's going to come back as. But sorry, I just went all over the place.
No.
And I interrupted you. I'll be quiet.
No. It's just, I think with this, similar to the media literacy conversation we're having before, where more so than vote for this, vote for that, like, you know, don't vote for Trump or DeSantis, please.
Right.
But like, know the process, because like the details matter.
Big time.
And it's easy, especially when we talk about how the Democratic Party has just basically shut out dissent, marginalized anyone who's trying to like push them.
You see, Nancy.
Yeah, like it feeds that disillusionment and the real feeling of like, okay, yeah, the system is like, I'm not going to disagree with anyone saying a two-party system is very rigged.
Yeah,
the system, because that's the point. Like they have the money and the infrastructure,
yep.
to where it's like, yeah, actually door knocking does work, but they can also reach a lot more people to door knock. They can reach a lot more people when it comes to lobbying. It costs money to fly people to Washington and house them and keep them there,
yep.
to lobby politicians. It's all these little details matter. And even with these elections, like, however, you know, like they put a lot of energy into, you know, they talk about whatever, like Wisconsin last general election, of like, it was determined by however many thousand votes or whatever is really what determined the presidency. And again, like it's easy to look at all these little details and say, so why should I care?
Yeah.
And especially like with national elections, especially with the presidential election, I understand that a little bit more, but when it comes to like trying to rally people to where they can have more involvement, more impact locally,
mm-hmm.
like it disillusions people for that process too. And we get results in these elections that, you know, I'm still very haunted by the re-election of Ted Wheeler among, because I feel like that happened not just with Ted Wheeler as mayor, but throughout the city council, where yes. it was a, you know, Mingus Mapps, who was endorsed by the police union, ran against Chloe Daly, who was like a known tenants' rights advocate,
yep.
who I do know people in the community who had like, weren't big fans of Chloe Daly like that, just as on some other stuff. But in that case, the decision was clear, and Mingus Mapps has since done everything everyone
would have thought someone endorsed who looks by like police Chloe. Union
would do. Like, he did that, and people warned everyone ahead of time, but it still happened. But same thing when people trying to, you know, like when Renee Gonzalez was running against Joanne Hardesty. And again, there's a very clear distinction between the two people. But yeah. when you're disillusioned with the system and you just gotta chip a little bit to make that margin work. Now we have Renee Gonzalez in there. We got Dan Ryan in there, who all just all just voted for a camping ban, which effectively, one, fines homeless people, which is a ridiculous, ridiculous fines, and then eventually imprisons if you can't pay those fines when you are homeless. Like, that's a policy they just passed.
I mean, and think that through. If there is a punishment, if the punishment for a crime is a fine, then it is a punishment because you are poor.
Right.
There is no in between with that. If I can just pay it and leave, I mean, that's the issue with bail. If I can just pay it and leave, then bye. Right. And so you're only going to have poor people within your jails because we can crowdfund that, you know, or get it from my auntie or get it from my dad. You know, like, those people with money have money and they don't have to worry about those consequences. Imagine being so upset by just seeing some tents outside, not living in one, not being impacted by the people that actually live there, just being getting off the freeway and seeing a mess. And it's so much of a bother to you that you hop on board an anti-Black anti-Black woman campaign in order to be a part of an anti-poor, anti-homeless campaign. Like, where are y'all? Like, what? Disillusioned is not a big enough, dramatic enough word. Like, it is.
It's different angles to it.
Yeah, it's like, wild. It's very wild. But anybody who thinks that you can fix or a solution would be jail to being poor, unqualified for the conversation, in my opinion. You are not anywhere close to being serious. If you want people to have homes and your idea is I shouldn't have to pay for it because I pay for my own or whatever, cool. Do you want to stop paying for everything else that you pay for billionaires that don't pay their taxes? You have no problem with that.
Like, police and jails cost more than housing people.
So much more. and the numbers are there. The numbers are accessible to everybody. You can respond in the tweet with the numbers and they're like, nah, no, put them in jail. Lock them up.
It's like cruel. I mean, honestly, like, the point. It is. Almost feels like cliche to say it at this point, but it's like cruelty is the policy. I think about during the midterms and watching, you know, go to my parents' house, they live in Lake Oswego, and seeing what ads they're running for, you know, these defund the police radicals are burning down the city. Aren't you scared of all these homeless people? We must do something. It's like, you know, this People for Portland old nonsense. Just
People for Landlords.
Yeah.
Oh.
Portland Business Alliance.
We definitely need more political action packs for the business class.
There's all these campaigns appealing to people in the suburbs, people, business owners who are down with the Portland Business Alliance.
Yep.
To, again, do a policy. All these policies are either more money for cops.
Yep.
To kick people's asses on the streets and arrest them.
Yep.
Or we have all these empty prison beds that we need to fill, and we already invested so much money. Got to put some people in it. But those are, if you boil down all of these policies, that's the solution every time.
Yep.
It's one or both of those. And I don't know how any reasonable person, if you say you're worried about your safety, there's nothing about that that makes society safer.
Like, literally nothing.
Nothing. But if you want, again, when cruelty is the point, when feeding into people's, you know, fears, that's very nice way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
Fears, prejudices is the point. And you can offer that quick solution of, well, oh, chill. You're scared of those people? Let's enact a bunch of cruelty on them. That'll do it.
I mean, I say pay attention to how much money they spend on things that have nothing to do with a solution, right? That is politicians, that is political action PACs, that's the people that are out here doing the most, we need revolutionary change. And that means jail. That means do the thing that we have as a country always done. I say pay attention to what they are willing to spend money on and what they aren't willing to spend money on, right? Because they will spend millions and millions of dollars to lie to you, literally do fan fiction. The ad you're talking about, the city's on fire, and aren't you scared? And it's fan fiction. That never, none of it was happening. Not in the way that that was described, and not in the way that anybody who lives here looked out there and went, oh yeah, that is, oh wow, that's a, yeah, it looks like, just looks just like the news. Nowhere, nowhere. And the amount of people that we had to like continuously be like, no, Portland is fine and our kids are fine and nothing's, it's not on fire. It's not, it's two blocks downtown. Like, but imagine so spending millions of dollars on that. What could you have done if your idea is, you know, we'll round people up and take them to shelters or whatever it is. Did you buy a fleet of vans to go round people up, or did you spend money on ads to lie? And so anybody who's out here supporting those ideas, I'm like, okay, cool. What have they done? Show me. Cause they can't. If you are, if your idea is urban alchemy or safe harbor or any of these grifting, you know, private companies that are going to get millions of our dollars mm-hmm. to do absolutely nothing but terrorize poor and homeless folks, and call that giving them resources. If that's the fix, it isn't just that cruelty is the point. Like, it's mandatory. Like, you want to see people harmed before you see people hurt. And that's, again, that's some self-reflection people got to do. That's on y'all.
Yeah.
I can't imagine voting for someone that, like Rene Gonzalez, who spent millions of dollars, who was able to benefit from, you know, Jordan Schnitzer giving him office space downtown and all this stuff, and being able to do and be so hypocritical about, no one can go downtown, but I guess your campaign can be there. You know, like, no one can go downtown because it's so scary and there's so many homeless people and da, 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 but you are there for free and you are, have no problem with it. Somehow your car is safe. You know, like, all of the hypocritical stuff. I can't see myself voting for those people and then being okay with what has happened. Like, you know, yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Mingus is such a disappointment. Renee was always gonna, you know, but Portland is really showing its white lash. Like, it's really giving us the, where are the people of color we can, that are willing to weaponize their identity, so that we can say, look, we got a black man on city council, and look, we have a Latino man on, and he's a Democrat, which he absolutely is not.
Not at all. It's wild. Like, again, the playbook isn't new. It's everywhere, but it's just, it's so in your face with like it's very transparent. I think another thing that about it that's frightening to me, because again, I look at these ads and I'm like, most reasonable people should look at this and be like, this is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. You know, and again, it being in like LO, knowing people's like, yeah, you or your kids were down there downtown, and yet your peers believe this about the thing,
right?
Like, because usually that's can kind of be the thing. Like, if you have a connection, it's like, oh, I guess it's not the scary thing on TV. No, but also because they're spending all this money to not just broadcast it around the state, but broadcast it to nationally. People. Yeah, nationally. So I'll follow like certain channels, personalities. I'll follow talking about the whole Cop City thing in Georgia. And then you'll just randomly hear Portland like name dropped, and like even like progressive outlets out of state, the only thing they're hearing is the propaganda because it has this big net.
Yep.
So they're repeating that stuff about Portland too, or repeating that, you know, that we've actually passed all these laws and it's this progressive haven that it is definitely not. And I'm just like, that's the other effect of this, because like we talked about at the beginning, the amount of money being spent on propaganda and misinforming people, or at the very least feeding enough of that disillusionment to make people just throw up their hands and say, I don't want to get involved, which is where I want to bring it back. Because one, Portland City Council is expanding to 12 seats.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very, very important. And when I talk about specifically, you know, because people are going to listen to this and say, okay, you said don't get disillusioned. Now you just shared all these details of why I should be disillusioned. So what can I do? It's like, I need to get involved with these with groups doing this work. I'll shout one, Imagine Black, who does it.
Shout but out,
like,
Imagine
there's
Black.
But there's plenty of community organizations that, you know, of all, Mingus Maps was leading the charge to try and defund, unironically.
Oh.
that
shout
happened
out
too.
Reimagine Oregon.
Yeah,
we were there for that. We saw you, Mingus.
Yeah. So, like, this is, again, national elections, there's whole other stuff there, but locally, when it comes to mobilizing around these city council seats, like, we got to do it. We got to, however, not everyone needs to run for office. There's plenty, again, people need door knockers. People are going to just, you know, call people.
People need phone people.
All
people
these
need
small
email
things
situations.
Matter
yep.
because you're fighting against big money to keep things the way they are.
Yes.
And so I don't, and also not to get, again, I go back to the mayor's race because it's like Ted Wheeler versus Sarah Iannarone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember hearing a lot of people being like, these are the same candidate. And I was like, no, don't.
I wonder
don't
how
do
much
that.
Money was spent to say that, right?
Also that.
Like, I want people to get to the point when you're thinking politics, you absolutely need to be thinking who funded this thing. Like, knowing that someone like Roger Stone and Steve Bannon are the catalyst for a Donald Trump presidency. Y'all need to know who those people are, and you need to know what they're doing, because Roger Stone is friends with every single one of those Proud Boys. Like, friends. Like, let's do the Coke party after we go to the rally, friends. Like, he is the one who was telling them, you know what you need to do is get on the school boards. Like, y'all need to know who these people are, because the people that are funding People for Portland mm-hmm. are that same ilk.
Yep.
It's the same thing. It's just in your actual neighborhood where it actually immediately matters to you. And if you aren't paying attention to who is funding these things, who would tell you that Ted Wheeler is the same as Sarah Iannarone? Like, who? Right. Who's telling you that? And why? Maybe co-opting some thoughts there, maybe going to act like that person is a little more progressive than they are, when we know that timber barons are actual conservatives when it comes to everything. And so there's no room for calling him a Democrat, a progressive, a leftist, anything. He is not here for the people. So who paid for that? That's the media literacy I want people to be having. Like, I want people to be like, huh, I've heard this story 3 times now from KATU, but when I hear it from KGW, it's a little bit different. Why? Like, that's what I want to happen, because a lot of these places are going to continue. They have a moneyed interest, and a moneyed interest is their survival. So you're going to get a different message. And locally, I just want to speak to really quickly how important, I can't remember in this very moment, but there was a moment when it was like a few people I know that were just like, national politics don't matter. Like, it doesn't matter who the president is. It only matters who your local politicians are. And I think we've proven that that was not true. I think mm-hmm. we can just not even really deal with that. But to the point of how important local politics are, the amount of people that don't know that Mingus Maps tried to take $5 million from a Black nonprofit that is designed to directly help Black Oregonians, because they didn't distribute the funds fast enough. And he said, I think we should take that $5 million and give it to the police, because they're not doing their job. That nonprofit isn't doing their job. not enough people know that Reimagine Oregon never got the money.
Yeah, it was held
so
up.
So distribute what funds, right? That should be disqualifying. Mingus Mapp should not get to bring up anything else. He should have to like sit there in the timeout chair if we're not going to kick him off the city council. Like, you should not get to be there. If you are going to make these huge, swift moves of trying to take money from Black people that have yet to get that money, embarrass everybody who was on top, who was on board, right? Because Dan Ryan, you are a shameful man anyway, but like, here you are. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Oh, wait, what? They never got the money. How come no one knew that?
Just quick clarification for those not watching, Dan Ryan also on the city council, maybe someone else, in the middle of this whole discussion, like, it's not hyperbole, literally like learned and kind of changed position.
I mean, he changed position. Mingus didn't.
I mean, of course not.
I mean, like, think that. You got the person who is supposed to be the director, the executive director of this nonprofit, which has yet to be funded, saying, hey, yeah, you could have just asked me this. We don't have the money.
Right.
You want to send it through? A wire? What do you want to do? Let me have the money and redistribute it. Like, not enough people know that. So locally, when you are in your, and especially in Portland and surrounding areas, but if you are hearing people say the police were defunded and that's why, they never were. If you are hearing drugs are totally legal and that's why, they never were. There is words absolutely matter. There is a difference between decriminalizing and legalizing, a humongous difference between those two. And I want people to understand that, like, if the police are the ones telling you this, there should always be a question mark. There should always be a side eye. There should always be a, okay, great. Thank you for sharing. And then you go find out what actually happened, because they lie on your police report. They lie on your speeding ticket. They lie on everything. So you think that they're not going to tell you, as they have quit their jobs but are still getting paid, that it's your fault that that's happening? They're definitely going to tell you that directly to your face. But the combination of the police deciding, I'm not going to do my job because these people don't want to be brutalized, and not funding not going the way that it was supposed to go for Measure 110. It looks wild. And somehow we have just completely forgotten that there was an entire pandemic and that thing is still happening and that people lost everything. And we're just going to, you know, capitalism our way out of it. We're not going to take care of anybody. We have decided rent moratorium. Who needs that? Our own Republican senators stopped going to work for so long. There are three of them, at least three of them, that will not get to run again. But on top of it, they're holding up all the funding.
Well, they hold.
The money's just sitting there. They're holding us hostage and nobody's yelling at them. That's the thing that gets me.
And they're going to get everything they want, most likely, because they did it.
Because, yes. Yeah. Y'all need to be paying attention to that so this doesn't continue to happen. Like, government doesn't have to work this way. Bureaucracies don't have to be this, mashed up. Like, it literally doesn't have to. It is on purpose. It is on purpose so that people are not helped, so that these are just jobs, so that this is just a performance. So politics, who cares? That's what it's for. I don't want to pay for that. I don't want my money to go to that.
That's the battle we're fighting. Just kind of like bring it all back when we talk about even this media space, the information gaps. And even to the point where we were talking about Jimmy Dore earlier and these other elements of what makes it so difficult, because on one hand, you have like Trump, DeSantis, conservative, whole political and media infrastructure and, you know, just bullhorn that you're constantly dealing with. Then you got the Joe Biden, milquetoast Democrat media, political infrastructure dominating the space. And then even just in that little sliver of like people trying to actually do the right thing or somewhat activated, like we're trying to get people to pay attention to details, which seems like an easy thing. But then you also have Jimmy Dore out there and they're like, well, what you're, all those details you're talking about is a little bit too much.
Yeah.
The angry guy with a very, with a message that fits on a bumper sticker. We're going to pay attention to him because we don't, there's too much other stuff to pay attention to. And I like healthcare. So let's do that. And it's like, we're trying to cut through, we're trying to cut through all of that.
Yeah.
Even in these battles, just to, again, it's not that I don't want people to take away like, oh, I guess I'm helpless. There's too much going on. Actually, there's so many places you could get, like, you don't have to hit a home run with everything.
Yeah.
There's so many places, like something as simple, again, door knocking, phone banking, you know,
flyers donating, at the grocery store.
All these, I just keep coming back to this LO audience with people asking, what can I do? You have money. The money. It's the money.
It's the money. It's there's, always the money. The answer is the money.
Like, there are so many places where maybe we can't win it all tomorrow, but these 12 city council seats.
That's huge. To
change Portland.
Huge. Ranked choice voting.
Over.
Huge. Huge. Like, this is how Portland gets the rep that it has not deserved, though, is, you know, we will make some strides. They will not get implemented. But we will vote for it. Like, we want these things. And so I'm excited to see, you know, all of, I'm excited for the rollout of an expanded city council. Not as excited to see, you know, all the people that run. But I am, I'm hopeful that for people to understand the importance of expanding the city council enough to vote for it, and enough to at least talk about it to get other people to vote for it enough, you know, that leads me to believe that they have at least a little bit of an understanding that that controlled power and the way that it has been does not work. So if it isn't going to be that, let's take some chances instead of like going back to the thing we also know doesn't work, like jail or authoritarianism, you know.
Those things.
Those little things.
Even to your point about, you know, we're talking about Dr. West and sort of the op-ed, Ron DeSantis, sort of like specifically, well, like what does revolutionary actually mean? Like the one, I'm not gonna call it a positive, but I feel like the one thing the Trump presidency kind of showed, because there was like certain policy implementation that most people thought, yeah, you can't actually do that, right? You can't. And then they did kind of pull the veil off, again, in a horrifyingly fascist direction, but it did pull the veil off of like, no, actually, if you put the people in the seats to make the decisions or to control the money, you can actually do that if you want to. Like, it is a lot of work to do that, especially when you don't have all that infrastructure. But, like, we can do it. We can do it here. Like, shout out to the Charter Commission for actually getting structural reforms passed. And, like, that's a big win that, you know, we shout out a little bit. We don't shout out enough. But it's like, we can do these things. Like, it does take organizing. Yep. It does take, sorry, kids and people who are young at heart. There are a lot of boring meetings that do have to happen to get everyone on the same page and make some things work. A lot of the not so sexy parts of the revolutionary process are also involved, but it can be done. So please do not take this as a, like, please understand the details, but don't take this as like a period of hopelessness. Take this as like, this is what we can do. Here's spot 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, a million that you can plug in at, and we can actually get this done.
Yes, that's the message. That's the message.
Yeah, Morgan, thank you again for taking the time and being willing to go down this rabbit hole of anger and frustration and disillusionment with me. And hopefully there was some hope somewhere there. Again,
there definitely was.
Yeah.
Is.
Is
still there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is. We sound so convinced. But yeah, thank you again.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
This has been the Bruce Poinsett Show. Again, you can catch us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7, or you can catch clips on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett. If you want access to exclusive bonus coverage, you can go to patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett. And make sure to follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM. That's numbers with a Z. Or on the Numbers Podcast Network on all podcasting platforms, or thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's numbers with a C.